Welcome to the fourth edition of A Classic of the Month. Today, we will submerge in the world of Starless by King Crimson. As I mentioned in last month's article, Progressive Rock, a Misleading Tag, one of the most prominent characteristics of this genre is, as a neo-baroque expression, the development of thematic material aimed at building one or several climaxes throughout the piece. Other two characteristics of neo-baroque that represents this genre very well and are key to the construction of Starless are the aesthetic of repetition and variation, and a desire to evoke states of transcendence. Starless is a perfect example of how the use of repetition and variation, as well as harmonic resources, can be used to gradually build a series of climaxes. The obsessive repetition of single notes is hypnotic and helps to create a unique environment that naturally leads to the climaxes that have made this song an all-time classic. Starless uses a couple of harmonic resources that are very common in progressive rock and in classical music as well: harmonic pedals and a couple of cadences known as deceptive and suspended. But before we describe how these resources are used in the piece, we need first to make a crash course in basic principles of tonality. Tonality and expectation go hand in hand. In the discussion that will follow, when I talk about attraction and intensity of the attraction, what I mean is what our mind has been trained to expect and how strong this expectation is. To describe tonality without having basic notions of music theory is tricky, but let's give it a shot. In order to achieve this, let's think of notes as magnets with different intensities and even different polarities. In my article Tonality and the Purpose of Life, I explained that the way tonality is perceived is by creating a hierarchy of notes. So, once we perceive a tonal center, notes immediately have ranks assigned. Some are heavily attracted to the tonal center, others are attracted but to a lesser degree, and this allows them to be used as pivotal points to modulate to other tonalities. And others are not attracted, quite the opposite. Their polarity is reversed and tend to move away from the tonic. These notes and the chords, that is, three or more notes played simultaneously, built around them, are used to create dissonant chords. In that article, I also argue that the reason why tonal music has been so strongly ingrained in our culture is because it has been able to create a frame of reference. In other words, we have been trained to expect an outcome when we hear a series of chords. Even if we have no music training, if we listen to this series of chords, we automatically expect the outcome. In tonal music, a cadence is a sequence of chords that concludes a musical phrase. When we hear a series of chords and expect the next one, what is happening in the background is that one of many different cadences is in action. These cadences have been used for centuries and are at the core of this oral conditioning that has built the tonal frame of reference in the Western culture. When we hear the chord that we are expecting, probably a cadence known as perfect has occurred. What I played in the previous example was a perfect cadence. If, on the other hand, instead of the chord that you're expecting, you hear another one, then you probably heard one of several cadences known as interrupted or deceptive cadences. Some deceptive cadences use a chord known as Neapolitan 6 for this purpose. Let me give you an example. First, listen to a perfect cadence. In this case, I start in F and play a couple of chords that lead me back to F where I started. Straightforward and predictable. Now let's change this perfect cadence into a deceptive one using the Neapolitan 6 chord. This chord is an example of many that can be used to move the tonal center. I will play the same F chord again and the first of the two chords used in the previous example. But then, at the third chord, third second, you will hear the Neapolitan 6. I will use it to move the tonal center. After playing two more chords, I will finish in B flat instead of F. So, I used the Neapolitan 6 chord to build a cadence that allowed me to modulate from one tone to another. Let's listen to this example by Camel, who uses the Neapolitan 6 in their suite Harbor of Tears. Before moving on, let's go a little further in the explanation of tonality. When we define a tonal center, the chord that sits on the tonal center is called tonic. The other chords are assigned ranks, whose names are suggestive of how closely related they are to the tonic. It may or may not explain why humans have adopted the tonal structure that we have, but the fact is that the second most important chord in terms of its magnetic attraction to the tonic is called dominant chord or fifth, which happens to match the first harmonic tone that appears in the harmonic series after the fundamental tone itself and its octave. The magnetic attraction between the dominant and its tonic is evident for all Westerners. As you will see, the note B that sits next to the tonic C has an irresistible temptation to move towards the tonic. This note is very important in the dominant chord because it can determine two modes used extensively in Western music, major and minor. Other chords have different rankings depending on how strongly they lead back to the tonic. The written version of the article has an example with the names. As I said, we have been trained to expect how these chords relate to each other, even with no music training. One of the most famous sequence of chords is one defined in Pachelbel's canon in D major. Most of you have probably seen this video where the comedian Rob Paravonian shows how this sequence of chords have been used and abused in every music genre. In case you have never seen it, there's a link to it in the written version of this article. Playing with these harmonic expectations is the basis for the creation of tension and distension in tonal music. There are innumerable ways to disrupt cadences and to modulate from one tonal center to another. They require a good understanding of harmony and are far beyond the scope of this simple introduction. However, there is a resource that is very easy to construct, and maybe that is why it has been used so extensively in progressive rock. Harmonic pedals. A very important note in any chord is the first or lowest because it helps identify the tonal center. In a simple chord, here it is. To see how important it is, let me play the same tonic dominant chord, playing the bass at a higher volume. Now listen to what happens if I invert the order of the bass note. This harmonic resource is used very frequently by prog composers like Tony Banks. A harmonic pedal is built by keeping the bass note constant while changing the harmony. Examples in progressive rock are countless, so let me give you an example in classical music. This is how it is used by Rachmaninoff in his Piano Concerto No. 2, Opus 18 in C minor. The piece starts with a harmonic pedal, but not in the tonic, but instead in the subdominant, F. Before introducing the main theme, it moves to the dominant, G, and ends in C, the tonic, and the main theme is introduced. Listen to the first 30 seconds in this interpretation by Anna Fedorova and the Northwest German Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Martin Panteleev. The coda of the second movement is one of the most beautiful passages that I have ever listened to. The harmonic pedal moves effortlessly until it is kept steady in the end. For those of you reading the article and watching the video examples, notice at second 37 that the double bass players are playing the E note in the air. This is the lowest pitch of the instrument. Their left hand is resting in the body of the instrument. This harmonic pedal is kept until the end of the movement and only interrupted for a moment when the soloist plays the dominant, B, to finish the piece in the tonic, E. The following is a good example of both resources, harmonic pedal and deceptive cadence, used in conjunction. This is the coda of Triptych Nun Mist, published in issue number 2 of Phaedrus. Notice that the bass keeps a constant note, A, the harmonic pedal. It runs through three complete cycles. The third chord prepares a return to the tonic, but the fourth chord breaks the cycle, a deceptive cadence. The fourth and final time, the harmony finally resolves, but in A major instead of A minor. Let's listen to it. Sometimes the harmonic pedal expands, forming a chord that remains static, building tension and a hypnotic atmosphere until the chord finally resolves. Pink Floyd uses this resource masterfully in Shine On You, Crazy Diamond. At the beginning of the piece, the pedal is kept for more than 2 minutes before resolving. For 30 seconds, the tonal center moves, and at 3:30, another static pedal section starts, beneath the famous four-note motif played by the guitar. Notice the very different character of these four notes when, at 4:32, it finally resolves. We are now prepared to take on the analysis of Starless. In Starless, another type of cadence called suspended is used very effectively. In this case, what happens is that you are not thrown off in another direction like in the case of a deceptive cadence, but rather almost come to conclusion, but not quite. You are left suspended, very close to the real resolution, but not there yet. Let me play for you the opening measures so you can easily identify where the suspended cadence is. The cadence is suspended by keeping the harmonic pedal, in other words, by not moving the bass to the tonic. Even though the section is in G minor, the bass note is playing a D and keeps that note, creating a harmonic pedal that doesn't resolve as one would expect. For those with music knowledge, you will see that the D in the bass creates the second inversion of the G minor chord. Thank you. The natural cadence would be this. Those of you who know the piece very well will have already detected what I'm about to say. This suspended cadence is not resolved until the very end of the piece. Let's listen to all the sections where this cadence appears. And in the end of the piece, between seconds 12 and 13 in the example, it finally resolves. Now let's go through the piece analyzing its structure. Some authors like Eric Tam and Andrew Keeling say that Starless is in a loose sonata form. I disagree because, in my opinion, the only aspect in common with a sonata form is that the piece has two themes and a long development section. It is true, as they claim, that modern sonatas don't follow the format following the strict classical rules. For example, in the 20th century, it is common to present the two themes on unrelated tonalities. However, the fundamental characteristic of a sonata form is the development of the themes presented during the exposition. This doesn't happen in Starless, aside from the fact that the horn briefly presents the vocal theme in the middle of the C development. But let's discuss this as we move through the piece. In my opinion, the structure is A twice, B twice with a short interlude, A once, B once, C, which is an instrumental independent development with an interlude that re-exposes B, and A prime. Section C leads to the recapitulation of A, labeled A prime because, as described earlier, the cadence is finally resolved. Section A begins with a straight 4-4 rhythm and presents two themes. The first one is based on mellotron strings and the second introduces a guitar-based melody. The second time, the guitar moves up an octave when playing the second theme. Thank you. Now let's analyze section B. This is the only vocal section of the piece. It has a single theme, backed by embellishments provided by the saxophone. As in section A, it is also in G minor. The lyrics say, "Sundown dazzling day, gold through my eyes, but my eyes turned within, only see starless and Bible black. Ice blue silver sky fades into gray, to a gray hope that omens to be starless and Bible black. All friend charity, cruel twisted smile, and the smile signals emptiness for me, starless and Bible black." It would appear that these lyrics present a reflection on the fact that reality is dependent on our interpretation of what we perceive. The scene depicted can be interpreted in opposite ways. The lyrics provide three interpretations of what is being perceived that would likely come from a person with a profound depression. In the middle of a dazzling dusk, with gold pouring through my eyes turn within and I only see starless and Bible black. As dusk approaches, ice blue silver sky fades into gray, the shades of gray are interpreted as an omen of a dark and ominous future. The smile of a friend is perceived as charity. The smile turns into a twisted and cruel grin. His smile transforms into emptiness within. But from a different perspective, the scene could have been, on a bright afternoon, oblique sunbeams project a special light as one sees a good friend approaching us while he smiles. Soon, the sun disappears, giving rise to a beautiful landscape of colors that slowly turn into gray. Of course, the music of Starless would not have provided a good setting for this second interpretation. Notice that the main vocal theme is repeated twice. The first time, a deceptive cadence in the phrase Bible Black is used to prepare the repetition. The second time, it resolves. When the vocal theme is presented again in 3:42, the deceptive cadence reappears, moving the tonality to C, that is, modulating to C, and setting the scene for the long instrumental section. The first thing to notice in section C is that it is based on a 13x8 metric. I will put a few measures so you can try to count them. The way to know when the measure ends is when the bass figure starts again. In case you couldn't identify the beats, let me count them for you. The C section is in C minor, so the tonal center is around C. Let's see how tension is built in this section. The bass pattern presents the main resource using Starless to create tension. After playing the tonic, C, it sits for a while on F sharp before moving to G, the dominant, and then back to C through E flat. The interval between C and F sharp is made up of three whole tones, and it is usually referred to as a tritone. The tritone is traditionally known in music as the diabolus in musica, the devil in music. By the way, the tritone is used extensively in progressive rock. This single note, F sharp, immediately starts to build tension in this section of Starless. The first repetitive note in the guitar is a G, which is the dominant of C, and therefore builds a very stable and consonant chord. The bass moves to F, the subdominant of C, which is a standard harmonic sequence, but gives the same pattern, this time creating the tritone between F and B. While this is happening in the bass, the guitar picks a note none other than F sharp, that is, the same tritone from C introduced previously by the bass. So we are now confronted with a tonal ambiguity. Are we still in C, or do we move to F? So even if you have absolutely no training in music, as a listener, you already start to feel uneasy in your chair, just a few seconds into section C. The guitar goes back to G, and the bass back to its pattern on C. So everything would point back to stability if it weren't for the stringent B, slightly out of tune, moving down towards B-flat, and then played an octave higher, but in B-flat, also a bit out of tune, and moving upwards towards B. In the context of the tritone played by the bass, this ambiguous note that moves between B and B-flat works as a catapult and throws you right into a starless void. And we're only 35 seconds into section C. Remember that in addition to this, we are still moving under a 13x8 metric. Finally, both bass and guitar play the G note, the dominant of C, and the tension build is relaxed as we move back to C, as we're all expecting, in order to start the cycle once again. Notice that this passage is on 4-4, so in every cycle, when we reach G, the metric changes to 4 beats and back to 13 when the next cycle begins. On the second cycle, you hear a couple of wood blocks. They are played in 4x8, not in 13x8. Therefore, they start to shift as the cycle progresses. Try to count them. Also, the guitar, always in obsessive single note repetition, starts moving up the C scale until it reaches B. In the tonality of C, B is the note most heavily attracted to C, so when the bass moves to C, we are expecting the guitar to do the same, but instead, it stays on B. This is the beginning of the section that builds the famous starless climax. the third cycle, the drum finally comes into play, as the guitar continues to obsessively play B instead of C. Notice that at the end of the previous cycle, the woodblocks play a few regular beats, and when the drum pattern settles, the woodblocks go in patterns of 3 instead of 4. Bruford masterfully starts building tension as the guitar ascends. C, D, E, F, F sharp, while gradually transforming from a clean to a distorted sound, and will reach a first climax plateau when in the fourth cycle, the guitar reaches G. That's on 110 in the example. But gliding back and forth between F sharp, the tritone, and G. In this fourth cycle, the drum is at full force, with clever percussion embellishments. The guitar again goes back to the tritone, as in the beginning of the section, but an octave higher and keeping the distortion as opposed to the clean sound that appeared in the beginning of section C. Let's listen to the third and fourth cycles. We reach an interlude in 4-4 where two syncopated guitars support the lead guitar as it ascends. For those of you with more musical knowledge, notice that the additional tension is achieved by using a whole tone scale as it moves up an octave from G to G. We reach the second climax plateau when the sax improvisation starts. While the rhythm returns to 13 beats, but doubling the speed using 16th notes. The improvisation lasts for two full cycles. Notice that between the two cycles, the metric goes back to 4x4, letting a bit of breathing space before returning to the 13x16 metric. The guitar chord signals the beginning of each measure, both 13/16 and 4x4. We'll be right back. Another interlude appears, based on an instrumental version of section B, with an oboe and a cornet instead of the voice. Finally reach the next to last climax plateau and the longest one. For two full cycles, doubling the speed of the initial section C, the guitar stays obsessively moving from G to F sharp, the tritone. Bass and drums at full force and a second rhythm guitar further contributes to this sonic tsunami. The last cycle leads to the re-exposition of theme A, this time finally resolving the cadence as we saw previously. The moment when this cadence is resolved represents to me the final and most intense climax of the piece.